Hey, glad you're with us here on this Monday, Victory Monday, Tony. Is it too early to start that? I don't think so.
No, why not?
Can't get 23-0 without the first one, baby.
You know they're going to play 20 games. They won one. It's a Victory Monday.
Yes, Blake Bortles played very well, I thought. I think everybody thought. That's the number one takeaway. I believe it should be the number one takeaway for everybody. It's always nice to win. You want to win even if it's a preseason game, but it's not critical in
sure,
by any stretch of the imagination.
It's offense, right? It's offense, offense, offense. I tweeted out about it at halftime of the game on Friday night. Three stars in the first half of that game. Number one, I put Greg Olsen. Honestly, because with the install of a new offense and how putrid they looked at times offensively last year, uncomfortable, unsure of themselves in that offense, for them to look as comfortable as they did in a brand new offense early on in the preseason, I think is a positive sign. Again, Pittsburgh's not game planning for them, but they looked really comfortable with what they were being asked to do. Blake Bortles and Toby Gerhardt were the three stars of the first half of that game on Friday night, at least for me. That they looked as comfortable in the offense as they did was a bit of a surprise for me. I hope it continues throughout the preseason so that you can feel good about it going into week one against Carolina.
You know what I thought, Tony, in going back and watching the game myself, is that you look at guys running wide open on other teams, and we've said it for how many years? How come the Jags can't have that? How come the Jags can't have a guy who catches a ball with nobody draped all over him and gives him a chance to run after the catch, hit him in stride? And I don't know if it's the scheme, I don't know if it's the coverage or the fact that Pittsburgh's not, you know, game planning, it's week one of the preseason, but boy, I thought Allen Robinson found a nice soft spot on that third and long.
Sure.
I thought Clay Harbor a couple of times got wide open down the field. Now, we're not talking about 50-yard bombs, the Big Ben Hail Mary types, but I thought the Jags threw the ball down the field and had open targets, and that's exciting. We always wonder, why do other teams have this? You know, is it the game planning? Is it the players? What is it? Is it the protection allowing the play to develop? Well, some of all of those things, probably. And I do think, overall, the protection was solid. The offensive line was better. It took a step in the right direction compared to last year overall. Now, there were some glaring spots, obviously. There were some glaring spots defensively, as Jeff pointed out. Pittsburgh just showed up and said, watch this. Bam, bam, bam.
Right.
I mean, that was pretty easy. And really, the most glaring part of that, Tony, all right, you get beat on a double move, and you get beat. Okay.
Well, look, Devon House slipped. The Martavis Bryant had his hands on him. It's a play that's not going to happen very often.
But to me, the most glaring thing was on the two-point conversion. As Ben just stood back there, and as I said in the postgame, it reminded me of Tony Romo in Dallas last year, a couple of plays where he just stood there and had all day and all day.
Yeah, who were the three rushers on that play? I know they only had three down linemen, but I can't remember who the three were for that snap.
I don't remember who they were either, but I know this. Ben Roethlisberger could have waited another 5 minutes, it appeared, until somebody broke open.
And having eight guys in coverage from the 2 yard line, it's just not something that I'm used to seeing.
Right. Well, if you're going to do that, you better get somebody eventually to move that quarterback off his spot. And he just stood there and kind of surveyed the field. Again, it's one drive, it's one play there, but it's what we have to look at now.
Sure. And look, if Devon House doesn't slip, they might have forced the punt. In all honesty, on that drive, that was a 3rd and 5 situation where Devon House slips. He did slip, right? He did slip. The play gets over the top, and I know everyone's getting on to Devon House a little bit today. I'm less on Devon House for that type of play. And honestly, if you go back and watch his time in Green Bay, that stuff happened. It's on tape. That stuff happened to Devon House when he was in Green Bay. Now, what House does that the good cornerbacks in this league do is he has that play over the top, and then he makes the play on Darius Hayward Bay. Like, he doesn't remember the touchdown. He only remembers how good he is. Like,
well,
he's
he made that play,
that type of guy.
But Martavis Bryant also almost had another big one that he caught and couldn't keep both feet in bounds.
I still think that was offensive pass.
I don't. I thought he did a very good job of not extending his arm on that play. And look.
But I get aggravated with those calls because if the defensive back is in that position and that kind of contact is made, flag comes out.
That may be the case. That may be the case. But some of those calls are going to go with you. Some of those are going to go against you. And, you know, that's fine if you, the referee can throw the flag after the play, after the incompletion, and you knock it down. You're allowed to do that too.
Sure.
You know, don't count on the ref bailing you out. And in that one, I thought it was close enough 50-50 that I didn't have any problem with the non-call, and Martavis Bryant just couldn't get a second foot inbound. So that could have been another.
Martavis Bryant. Weird play.
He could have had about 100 yards receiving if he catches that.
It was a weird play because if you watch the replay, the official actually grabbed his flag. And then when he saw the play was incomplete, didn't throw it.
Maybe
it was
just
a weird play.
Maybe he just figured that, you know, he wasn't going to let it. He was going to let it go at that point. It's preseason. I believe you should throw the penalty regardless. But I think we've heard that over the years too. Look, there, you can call holding on every play, and if it doesn't materially impact the outcome of the play, sometimes they let some of those things go. So today, we'll get into the good, the bad. I thought more good than bad, certainly, for the Jags, and I would be encouraged as a Jag supporter. And again, no starting defensive lineman was in that game, so that, you know, you hope mitigates some of the lack of pressure that you got on quarterbacks in the game. Cap, he's like, what lack of pressure? Are you kidding me? Did you see
he
me?
He played well.
Cap, be good for him, man. So we'll get into it today, and we want your calls, as we will every Monday, reacting to the football of the weekend. 641-1010 is the number, and that also doubles as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line if you'd like to get in today. The question of the day asks you this. Other than Blake Bortles and injuries, which are obviously, I think, Blake's play, the biggest positive, injuries, the clearest negative, if not the biggest negative, however you want to look at it. Eliminate those. Give us your biggest positive beyond Blake, your biggest negative other than the injuries. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. Try to include that hashtag Jaguars today so we can read it back on the air a little bit later on the show. We'll hear from Gus Bradley, some of his thoughts after getting to watch some of the film as he met the assembled media on Saturday afternoon. So we'll hear some of that. Take plenty of your calls, we hope, with your reaction to the Jags starting off their play on the field. Look, I watched when I got home, Tony. I don't know what time it was when I got home, but it was in the middle of the damn morning. All right, and I turned on the TV and I saw some local coverage and a lot of happy fans coming out. And you know what? Even if it is preseason, a lot of them express that sentiment. You'd rather win. Anytime you take the field, you'd rather win. Build that winning culture, that winning mentality. So good for the Jags for pulling it out. Wasn't the most crucial thing by far. The most crucial thing is the performance of the first team versus the first team, in our opinion. Certainly the play of Blake Bortles, a big factor in that. But we'll get your reaction to everything that went down here at Everbank on Friday night throughout the course of the next 2 hours. With that, Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Monday's brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Glad you're along with us. We'll try to catch up with Johnny O as well, get his reaction to the Jags' first preseason encounter a little bit later on in the show, if we have time for that. Plenty from Gus, and as we said, hit the ground rolling, and here we go. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, 641-1010. Phone lines open to you right now. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
The station that takes you inside the huddle.
Let's go solo left stud, pass 94 punch. Laser Z corner. Heads up for stickier angle.
1010XL, Jacksonville Sports Superstation. And 92.5 FM.
I think I played okay. You know, I think I missed Clay on that the second drive with him coming across the middle. I think I missed him high. But, I think we did some good stuff. I think we ran the ball well, and that's what we wanted to do. That's a big part of who we are. We want to be able to run the football, and that's going to open up the rest of our offense.
You wouldn't expect much different out of Blake Bortles. It's a preseason game, for goodness sakes. You know, he's not going to hype, you know, I could have had a 14 out of 15 day, Tony, like the rest of us are doing here.
Hey, Blake, you didn't miss him. You did not miss him high. He dropped the ball.
On the drop, no. Yeah. No. He didn't miss him at all. But that's a quarterback protecting his guy, is what that is. Clay Harbor apparently going to run wide ass open all season, Tony. Nobody's going to guard this guy, or he's just going to beat every kind of coverage. I thought, you know, let's give Chad Henne some love. I thought he played well, you know.
No, Henne's been sharp.
Nobody's creating a quarterback controversy. I'm just acknowledging Henne has played well, and as you said, he's been sharp throughout the offseason.
Yeah, he looked good in the scrimmage. He's looked good in practice. Whatever the role is, he's comfortable with it right now here in Jacksonville, and he looks good in this new offense, which... good for Chad Henne, man.
Good for Henne, right. We want him to continue to look good on the practice field and only on the practice field.
Because Blake has looked good, too.
He has. Yeah, know, and so he looked very good. And it's all good. And we'll get to the phone calls here momentarily. 641-1010 is the number, of course. For me, beyond Blake, maybe the biggest positive was, you know, they seem to have some consistently positive yards in the run game in the first half, right? Other than the Chad Henne kneel down at the end of the half, take that out, they average 4 yards a carry, which is not eye-popping, but it's solid. And I don't remember any carries for loss. You know, there may have been one in there, but they were consistently picking up good yardage. I thought Toby Gerhart looked strong. Right, and showed you the kind of back he can be. He can make his own hole when he's healthy. And a couple of times he carried a few guys, a few extra yards. You know, obviously the running back screenplay worked to great effect in this football game. And they've got a variety of backs back there. Now, you know, I'm interested to see what TJ Yeldon's going to look like when he gets out there behind that line.
Absolutely, yeah.
By the way, returning to practice today, or eligible to return to practice today, Chris Clemons and James Sample.
Apparently they're going to be limited in practice today, but they're back on the practice field.
That's better than nothing, right?
Yep.
And obviously, more limited would be Julius Thomas and Jonathan Cyprien.
As in, not practicing.
Correct. what the hell is going on with the hand injuries, man? I mean,
Yeldon, I don't know, and I still
isn't that weird?
I still don't know how Julius Thomas was a right hand injury. Like, I watched the play. That's the hand he had the ball in.
Yeah.
I still don't know how it happened that way on that play, but the right hand injury, it sounds like he's going to be good to go for week one of the regular, which is what we all wanted, right? It was like, I don't care if we keep this guy in bubble wrap until week one.
Right.
We didn't want to see his hand get injured and that be the reason we don't see him until week one. But
you'd like to see him work on his timing a little bit.
Yeah, but. And it's funny even that watching the game on Friday, if they were going to play Julius Thomas and they were going to get him like that one touch in the game, that was the exact kind of play I'd want to get him the touch on. Right, where you move him behind the line of scrimmage, where he's not going to be in contact with anybody, just dump it off to him in the flat, let the fans go crazy for Julius Thomas, the $40 million man, making his play in the game. He just happened to get upended and break a bone in his right hand.
Man, did he get upended.
He did.
And when he did, you know, your first thing I'm thinking is lower body injury, and then he popped right up, and you're like, okay, and then immediately goes to the sideline.
Starts flexing.
You see him showing the hand to somebody, some trainer probably, and there we have it. And for both of those guys,
wonder how big those trainers' eyes were.
Yeah. Both of those guys, though, the prognosis is hopeful to have them back for week one.
Yeah.
So let's wait and see at this point in time. I think, you know, again, Clay Harbor's going to play like that. I don't want to play without Julius Thomas, but you feel good that you have another option. Keep in mind how big of a off season he was having last year, Tony, before he got hurt at the scrimmage down at Bartram Trail. And it really kind of derailed his preparation for the season.
Sure.
You know, so they've got some options there. I think the biggest negative, I mean, there are a few negatives, but the biggest one to me is just how easily Pittsburgh's first team offense went down and scored. Now, they're going to be one of the best offenses that the Jags face at any point this year,
yeah,
pre or regular season. But, hey, you know, a little resistance would be nice somewhere along the line.
It would be. And look, Ben looked as comfortable as he ever has, right? And
we've been saying it, right? He's at the top of his game, top of his career right now.
Like, he complained about Haley when he got there, and because Haley was basically saying, stop holding on to the ball so long, Ben.
Right.
And so he started doing these little quick dump-offs and letting guys like Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown make plays for him. And lo and behold, Ben Roethlisberger is one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League, and he looks really comfortable in what he's being asked to do, and the ball gets out quick, which is not something you could say about with Ben Roethlisberger 3 years ago. But it does now, and he's as effective as he's ever been in his career.
641-1010, the phone number. Let's get a few calls rolling here on this Monday. Brought to you by Wild West Guns of Gold. If you'd like to get in, that is the way for you to do it. Gus Bradley talking on Saturday about the game. Let's hear a few of his reflections on the game. Starting off with injury news, comparing the type of hand injury Cyprien has to the one that Julius Thomas suffered.
Better because he's a defensive back, right? I mean, a tight end, you know, similar time frames. Hey, they'll be out the main preseason. Hope to have him back for the first game. Well, with Cyp, he's even looks better because a DB, he could play with a splint on it, you know, for tackling.
Yeah, better in terms of his availability.
He's not a pass catcher.
Correct.
Right.
You'd like him to be occasionally. The other teams
every
passes.
Now and then.
Every now and then.
5 to 7 times in a year.
That'd be outstanding. I'd take. Are you kidding me? I'll take 6 picks right now. You sign me up. But he played with this for a while, Tony. It's something that you would think, even if you know, if it's just simply a pain tolerance issue, you'd expect him to be out there in week one. My bigger concern with Cyprian is I thought he took a bad angle on Le'Veon Bell. In the hole. Now, Le'Veon Bell's a shifty guy. He's going to pop it out and break some ankles in this league. There's no question. But I thought Cyprian had a chance to meet him in the hole and stop him for about a 2 or 3 yard game. And Le'Veon Bell was able to pop it outside and pick up a pretty nice gainer, which,
yeah.
Which he does. But I'd like to see a little bit more consistently when the play's there, guys are going to make plays, but make the tackle that presents itself.
Yeah, but on the 3rd and 7 later on, he got D'Angelo to the ground 2 yards short of first down.
Absolutely
did. Field. I mean, he made that play too, but you're right. He probably took a bad angle on that, and that's something we'll talk to Jeff Loggeman about tomorrow when he comes in to talk about the tape from Friday night's game as well. Gus Bradley talking on Saturday, his reaction to that first preseason game the day after.
Offensively, put some things together. I thought the run game, you could see we were physical. The backs were physical. I thought Toby was played real physical. Defensively, made plays when we needed to. If you look at the stats as far as the yards rushing, yards per carry, things like that, right in the areas that, we'd like to be in. But, just a lot of things we need to get corrected. Some, 10 men on the field, special teams. I think that happened 4 times. Just some substitution errors that we took place, mainly in the fourth quarter with some of the young guys. But we need to get those things corrected, along with some technique things. So we'll continue to grow from this. They're in meetings with their coaches right now, and we'll go through a corrections period today and take care of it.
For me, you have to balance out how much credit and credence you put into everything that happens in these preseason games. We all say
right.
It's only preseason, right? And obviously, what happened on Friday won't matter when they play Carolina on September 13th, but could it show you things trending in the right direction? If we're going to be excited about Blake looking so good, should we not be the littlest bit concerned when things don't go well? I think that's fair, and the question is how much you put on it. We had quite the debate in the post game on the play of Luke Jokel. And to me, it's a concern. I understand he probably only gave up a couple of big plays. He got beat pretty badly, it looked like, on the rush that Blake Bortles was able to get the ball in for the touchdown. But Blake uses athleticism to beat the defensive end outside. But it looked like he beat Luke to the inside. Then he just swam right by him to the outside. And Luke stayed with the play and got a little chip block. But Bortles had already turned the corner at that point. But to me, the thing that's concerning about Jokel is not that it's not just an isolated, here's a couple of plays in a preseason game. And if that's all it turns out to be, fantastic. But to me, he carries in the baggage of a year and a half of subpar play as first a right and then a left tackle for the Jags. And so I think, I said going into it, Blake was the biggest guy, the biggest thing I'm going to watch. You said the left side of the offensive line. And I
yep.
said, followed only by the left side of the offensive line, following only Blake Bortles for me. So it was something we were focused on going into it. And when you're looking for it and it happens, what I'm talking about is getting beat and getting whipped like he did on the James Harrison play.
Sure.
It's going to give me some trepidation until I see him consistently holding up game after game.
And he did look like he was anticipating something from Harrison, the bull rush or whatever it was, and was just in a bad position on the play and got beat. Right? I mean, it's just one of those plays where he gets beat, and look, I think he was okay. Overall, I thought that Luke Jokel was okay in the game on Friday night, and you mentioned the two plays where you might be able to say, oop, that wasn't good stuff from Luke Jokel, and I don't know, because I don't watch other left tackles in the league as closely as I watch Luke Jokel on a week-in, week-out basis, if that means he is an average left tackle in the National Football League. I don't know. All I know is the questions that we had for Luke Jokel going into the offseason are still unanswered. To this point, they're still unanswered. And whether or not he's going to be a consistent performer at that position for this team remains a big question mark for the Jags going into 2015.
See, and Tony Boselli pointed out on the game broadcast, what you're saying now is that he was anticipating the bull rush and got himself in a bad position. My analysis of that would be, Tony, if he is so concerned about getting himself in position to handle the bull rush, it's because it's something he hasn't handled very well,
right,
and he's still got concerns about handling it at this point because he's trying to get a jump and guess what the guy's going to do to him, and instead Harrison kind of just ran at him and then just slid to the inside and was by him in a second. So, you know, again, that yes, did he? Was it because he got himself in a bad position? Yeah, but why did he get in a bad position? Is it because he doesn't have confidence in himself still to handle those bull rushers? Is he physical enough at the point of attack? You know, is it, and that's, he's always come off as an offensive tackle that's a little bit light, and he's gotten handled at times by more physical pass rushers.
Sure.
So, moving along, let's get Jim on board now. 641-1010 is the number. Hi, Jim. How are you this morning?
Morning, guys. You touched on a couple of concerns. One, the Cyprian play where Le'Veon Bell broke that big run. It's getting to be too common to see Cyprian get caught up in the wash, as it were, there at the line, and people get by him. It happened a bunch last year, and that was a concern. The other concern I have is it's starting to become more commonplace than I would really feel comfortable with, and I hate to bring this guy up, but Allen Hurns dropping balls. I mean, go all the way back to the Redskin game last year. I mean, you know, Henny hits him in stride and drops that ball. That, who knows what that, you know, how, what effect it had on the game or would have had on the game from the beginning, but, you know, then he drops one in his hands, you know, Friday night. He dropped one in the scrimmage. It just, you know, starting to understand maybe why he was an undrafted free agent, but that's, you know, the issue. But on the NFL as a whole, I got to say one thing. One thing I feel good about the Jags is I think we got a reasonably decent backup quarterback. I don't know. If I were a fan of 25, 26 of the other NFL teams, I'd be scared as hell if my starting quarterback goes down, because some of these guys were looking really horrendous. And yeah, as far as Pittsburgh goes, they better pray that Ben Roethlisberger doesn't get hurt, because Landry Jones was terrible.
Jim, thank you. Landry Jones, thank you, buddy. Landry Jones won't be their backup. Bruce Gronkowski will be their backup, and he, in fact, just got activated today from whatever injured situation he was.
That's why Landry's played as much as he has.
Right, he's been playing a ton because he's been kind of the sacrificial lamb a little bit in the preseason. Yep. But his larger point, I think, is correct. And that's why
backup quarterback play in this league stinks.
Tony, that's why the NFL is, you know, you hear all these people, oh, it's a patty cake league, you know, la, 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 la. Well, do you want to watch bad quarterback play? Do you want to watch week after week after week of horrendous quarterback play? That's what the NFL understands. There are not enough to go around to have 32 quality starters in the NFL.
Right, Matt Castle gets passed around year to year.
Guys with a little experience who's not going to panic in the moment, who can, you know, kind of keep from wetting himself when he's out there and you know, hope for the best. I mean, there's not a ton of upside with a guy like Matt Castle, but he's competing for the starting job in Buffalo. Maybe Tyrod Taylor beats him out, but I think the larger point is correct.
You just said that. Maybe Tyrod Taylor beats him out.
I understand.
That's a starting quarterback battle in the National Football League, is Tyrod Taylor and Matt Castle. That tells you all you need to know about the quarterback position in the league and why, if you have a guy that you feel okay with as a backup, that's good. Okay with the backup is good in this league.
Right. And I think Jag fans are okay with Henny as a backup as long as he is firmly in that position.
Yeah.
Right. And as long as Blake's healthy, they're fine with Henny as the backup.
That's right. The backup.
They say it all now.
Stay the backup.
They say it all now. Give Henny a game of action, and the first time he checks it down on 3rd and 17, it's over, Tony. All this goodwill is out the window. It's easy to have goodwill when the guy is not expected to play, or you're hoping he doesn't have to play a snap that year at all. All right, 641-1010. We got to take a quick timeout. We'll go to the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line when we return. Take more of your calls here. More from Gus Bradley as well, looking back on the Jags preseason opener, a win 23-21 over the Pittsburgh Steelers right here on 1010XL. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony with you. Jaguars today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Definitely on the Vice City soundtrack, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Was, right?
Yeah.
Thought so. All right. There you go. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, here with you. Tyler Devitt, spinning the hits back at 1010XL World Headquarters over on Hogan Road. Monday's brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, from revolvers to semi-autos, everything in between. Wild West going to meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA. Guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns. Go to guns4jax.com, guns the number 4jax.com, or stop by Wild West Guns and Gold on Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. South Lane Avenue, 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold. Our Monday sponsor, who's calling me right now, whoever it is, should know better. I'm not, Tyler whispers in my ear, Glenn. No, I'm not asking who the next caller is on the line. I'm asking who's calling my personal cell phone right now. Who does not know me very well, or know my work schedule at least. That's all I'm saying. And no, I don't think Glenn, boy, that's good work from Glenn. If he's doubling up, he's like, hey, hurry up and pick me up because I'm your next caller. So let's go to Glenn. Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Good morning, and I promise I won't tweak your personal phone number out.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that, Glenn. What can we do for you?
Hey, listen, guys, enjoy your program, and I just wanted to chime in about the game. I'm a 20-year season ticket holder and have watched a lot of Jaguar football. So first and foremost, I want to get to the good stuff. And for me as a season ticket holder and someone who's in for the long run, I could not be happier with where our franchise is going, and the reason why is really simple. You've only got to have one thing and one thing only to build a team in the NFL, and I think we've got one in Bortles. He looks great, and the improvement from just preseason or not, it was his reads, his body language, the way the ball came out of his hand. I think we've got a quarterback, and like the old Kevin Costner movie, if you build it, they will come. If you've got a quarterback in the NFL, you can get there sooner or later.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and then on the negative side, I don't know why it's not in the community and in the radio and everywhere else a bigger elephant in the room. I think that with Baselli and them, who I respect their knowledge, but they are Jaguar employees and stuff. Listen, this Jokel, I watched him. I record the game, and like you said, I watch every play. Listen, he's going to be an NFL player, average at best. But he's not a second player picked in the draft, and we keep making these, he's going to get stronger, he's got potential, yeah. But, the bottom line is he's the biggest question mark on this roster, because the two plays that stand out the most from the exhibition game for me was the sack, number one, and then number two, when Bortles scored the touchdown. If you go back and look at the film, part of the reason he was outside of the pocket was Jokel Scott beat him with an inside spin move, And
I agree with you, and not to cut you off, but we addressed both of those plays, and I do agree with you as far as that goes. And look, I understand the point of view. Tony and I talked about this on the pregame on Friday. Tony goes, it doesn't matter where he was drafted. Well, it doesn't matter now when he winds up on a Sunday afternoon. It doesn't matter where he was drafted, but in the overall picture, this team has had a history, and not Dave Caldwell, but this team, this organization has had a history of recent massive failures in the top 10 of the draft. And, well, Jokel at this point is not in that category, and I don't know what category he's going to end up in. I do think when you spend the number two overall pick on a player who your GM declares is the best player in the draft, the guy they felt was the best, and he's played as he's played the last couple of years, it's a concern. And ultimately, is he the best option they have on this team? Yeah, I think he is. But that doesn't mean he doesn't need to get better than he's been. And, one texter said the line play. Here, let me see here. I'm trying to go back to it here. Here we go. He says, Luke got beat on that one play, but clearly he's better simply based on Blake's time in the pocket. Bortles had plenty of time to go through his progressions. And while that's true, Tony, if you give up one or two sacks a game as a left tackle, that's not a good performance, because not all 71 of those sacks were on Luke Jokel last year anyway.
Sure. Look, and I'm curious to talk to Jeff when he comes in tomorrow about the offensive line, because look, I think they were able to establish a little bit of a running game early on in Friday night's game, and I think they were better than they were last year. I don't think they were great on Friday night, and I think Bortles' athleticism and his ability to move around in the pocket and his consistency on Friday night, with the exception of the run to go get the touchdown, which was a fourth down play where he had to go make a play for the team, his willingness to just stay in the pocket and let it take that time. You know, where last year I think you would have seen him take off a handful of those plays, I think this year he wants to make plays from the pocket. I don't know that the offensive line was all that much better. I think it was better than last year, but I don't know that it's where it needs to be, and that's joke on everybody on that offensive line. I think Blake just made a concerted effort to make plays from inside that pocket. He moved around. He talked about the overthrow to Harbor. Look, if he had completed that pass, honestly, because it shouldn't have been a play that happened, and it was just Blake moving and making something happen on that play, and he threw it a little bit high, and he did that four or five times on Friday. I don't think the offensive line was
not
great.
Not throwing it high, moving and,
yeah,
and giving himself time to make
it. I don't think the offensive line was great. I thought it was better than it was last year.
Right.
Still not at the level it needs to be.
Improved, though.
Yeah.
Right. And as much, and I'm a jokal critic, but I do think overall the unit was improved. I didn't think it was glaringly bad, and was it glaringly bad on a couple of plays? Absolutely. And when it's, those come from,
well,
a guy that you have your eye on already.
Sure.
That's a concern. That's,
yeah,
my point.
And I think Bortles picked him up. And I think Bortles is the type of player, I'm not sure how quickly he's going to get to this point, but he is a talented enough player that he's going to pick up guys around him, and it started showing up a little bit on Friday.
All right, this is what Gus had to say. Gus was asked about this on Saturday after he had a chance to evaluate it a little bit further, because it's tough. Yes, a guy right after the game, you know, they're not, they can't see everything that's happening out there. So Gus was asked about the sack joke allowed and thoughts on his overall performance on Friday. Listen in.
I thought he performed pretty well. You know, he lunged on it and got beat, and it was a, you know, a sack caused fumble. But I thought Luke, you know, did much better when you look at his protection. Those things can happen. Harrison, I know he's a very, very good player, talented player. And, you know, listen, there's going to be times when, you know, sacks happen. But the consistent play is what we're looking for. And that's what we felt like we saw out of Luke. I thought in the run game you saw toughness from him, as well as the whole offensive line. So as far as us as a coaching staff, very pleased with the progress. Very pleased with where he's at.
You know, if this had been Brandon Linder who gave up the exact same play, based on how we felt about him going in,
yeah,
we wouldn't make such a big deal out of it, right? And so, you know, here's the head coach saying, overall, I thought the performance was, you know, solid and a step in the right direction. Let's see. Nobody's writing him off based on one play or one game. But it is something I will continue to monitor and something I'm not comfortable with at the present time.
Again, the questions aren't going away.
Right. And look, I hope he shoves it in my face and goes to the Pro Bowl for the next 5 years.
Be happy about it.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, but it's our job to sit here and take a look and tell you what we like, what we don't like, what we see, what we don't see, just like you do watching the game at home. So let's do this. Let's get Memphis Mac in, and we'll take a timeout. And we will come back. Actually, John is up next here. Josh, I'll get it straight one of these times. Let's get Josh up next, and then we'll take a timeout. What's up, Josh? How are you?
Gentlemen, how are you doing this morning?
Good. What's up?
Biggest thing I'm trying to do as a Jaguar fan is, while everyone is through this morning, and maybe rightly so, is kind of harping on Luke Doble and that one play in which James Harrison pretty much undressed him on that play, I'm still just trying to put it in my head. It is just preseason. There's still a lot of things that everybody on that roster still has to work out. Yes, the drops that the guys had at wide receiver, the ridiculous drop that the tight end had on one of those plays. Blake Bortles looks sharp. I like what I saw out of special teams. I love what I see out of the return game, and I think any one of those guys back there at punt returner is really going to finally start changing some things around, and we'll be able to have a punt returner we haven't had since Reggie Barlow has been here in Jacksonville. But I'm just really just trying to just say, like, you know what, hey, this is just one preseason game. Let's see where we are. If things happen in week one against Carolina, then yeah, I'll have some major concerns about Luke Doble. But right now, let's just kind of just calm down and see where we are and kind of go through this process and see what we do these next 3 weeks.
All right, that's fine, but, you know, we don't have the luxury of waiting 2 weeks to do a radio show. So when we come on here, all we've got to judge is the last performance that they put on tape. And, you know, so, nobody's saying...
Again, I thought Joko was okay.
Yeah,
he had a couple bad plays.
Whether him or Alan Hearns, no one's saying, man, this guy's garbage, he's done with. Well, some are out there, but nobody in this room is saying that.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, Tony. About a lean a date in football history as we've had just about all summer.
Yeah.
Couple of birthdays for you. 1968, Easy Ed McCaffrey was born on this date, 47 years old. And Antoine Randle-L. We talked about guys like Denard Robinson making the transition from quarterback to running back in the National Football League. Pretty rare there. We've seen more successful quarterback to wide receiver transformations like Julian Edelman. Antoine Randle-L, after playing quarterback at Indiana,
Hoosiers,
played 9 years in the National Football League. Tyler, big Hoosiers guy, caught 370 passes in the NFL. That's pretty damn good for a converted quarterback.
No doubt.
And got it done, and I had to stretch that one out because that's the only other note I have for this date in football history. He was born in 1979. Happy 36th to Antoine Randle-L. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Maybe you need the custom fit Stop Snoring Somnomed mouth guard. Maybe you need it. Maybe your loved ones need it. Maybe you need it so your loved ones can get a little sleep at night. Call 620-9225. It is a revelation. Also, Dr. McCall is certified Invisalign provider, and you get a 10% discount off all first-time customer initial visits. Check out jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services Dr. James McCall brings you this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
There have been four Week 1 preseason games since we left you on Friday night. Cecil Shorts caught a 58-yard touchdown pass in his debut as a member of the Houston Texans. Alfred Blue, who is expected to replace Arian Foster as the Texans' starting running back while he recovers from groin surgery, rushed for 59 yards on 9 carries. Brian Hoyer went 2-for-4 with 67 yards. And that Shorts touchdown as the starter, Ryan Mallett, 10 of 11 for 90 yards against San Francisco. Both guys battling for that starting job in Houston. Jameis Winston played the entire first half for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against Minnesota. He went 9 for 19 for 131 yards and a pick. He did rush for a touchdown late in that half. Teddy Bridgewater efficient again, 7 of 8 for 86 yards. The big news for the Vikings is the loss of right tackle Phil Loadholt, who tore his Achilles on the Vikings' second offensive snap of the game. He will be out for the year. Carson Palmer returned for the Arizona Cardinals. He went 4-for-4 for 77 yards, including a 57-yard hookup with running back Andre Ellington. Eric Berry also made his return for the Kansas City Chiefs, overcoming Hodgkin's lymphoma. Finally, yesterday, Philadelphia took on Indianapolis. Eagles rookie Nelson Aguilar took a high pass for Mark Sanchez, turned it into a 34-yard touchdown pass. Sanchez had wide-open receivers. He continually missed during his time on the field, going 2-for-7. Apparently, the Colts had a very strict pitch count on Andrew Luck because after he completed a third-down pass to Andre Johnson, he was pulled out of the game in the middle of a drive. He did finish 5-for-6 for 53 yards. All eyes, clearly, though, on the Eagles' debut of Tim Tebow. He started 4-for-4, then completed 2 of his next 8 passes, finishing 6-of-12 for 69 yards. He added a rushing touchdown late in the game.
Boy, you hear that injury news with guys like Phil Loadholt, DeMar Dotson in Tampa, who's going to miss, 6 to 10 weeks, but Loadholt out for the year. So, you don't want to lose Julius Thomas and Jonathan Cyprian for the next few weeks of the preseason, but compared to the alternative,
sure,
the much longer timeline, it's not ideal, but
they already are dealing with that with Dante.
It's far from the worst, right? Exactly. And so guys are going to get hurt. That's just the nature of it. And I know these guys were kind of freaking out a little bit on the broadcast, Tony and Jeff, with Blake. He'll need to be, diving and stretching the ball out with his right arm. Look, they're both, prior to that, are saying, hey, I want to see him play another series. You can't have it both ways. You can't ask him to be out there and then to play in some conservative fashion worried about getting hurt. I mean, you can't, right? I mean, you don't want him to get hurt, and had he gotten hurt on that play, it would have been terrible. But he's playing football, and that's what you're supposed to be doing in that moment.
Bowenko was hilarious on the post-game on Friday night, talking to him in the locker room. Jeff Lagerman caught up with him, and, Jeff asked him about his quarterback diving with that right arm extended for the pylon, and he was like, it was back when I was we got the audio of it, Tyler?
Yeah, we do.
Well, fire here's it up. What Luke Bowenko had to say.
Yeah, that was one of those, like, it's happening. It's like when I pulled up from three in high school, a coach is like, no, no, no. And then, you know, he scores, and it's like, yeah. But, you know, he was feeling it tonight. He was on fire. So, it was, you know, that's part of his deal, you know, let him play. And he makes plays like that. It's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, no one wants to see Luke Boyko jacking up the threes.
Apparently not. But as he said, if it goes down, then your coach is like, oh, how about that?
Yeah, Gus was funny about it, too, going in the locker room, because he got asked about it. He's like, how about your quarterback diving for the pylon? He's like, yeah, that was something. I mean, it's pretty funny.
What
but
are you going to do, though?
The guy made a play.
You're out there in the moment. Do you want Blake thinking, what, I should run this straight out of bounds? I mean, don't have him in there. If that's your concern, then don't have him on the field, because I get it, you know, but – everyone is going to get hit in the preseason.
Sure.
You're going to be in there somewhat, and every time he drops back to throw, he's at risk of getting hit. And, you know, the only way to protect him is to have him on the sideline, and this team needs to grow their chemistry together with a young quarterback.
No doubt about it. And one other quick note as we finish up the drive around the NFL, Kevin White, wide receiver for the Chicago Bears, has been dealing with a shin injury throughout the offseason, apparently tried to go back to work earlier last week. Felt pain in that shin again, so he's going to go under the knife. They're going to insert a rod into his leg.
Stress fracture.
Yeah, for a stress fracture, so he's going to be put on the PUP list. He will not be able to play for the first 6 weeks, and according to the Bears GM, could be out for the year. They don't know how he's going to respond and recover from that injury, so they could be missing their top 10 wide receiver pick for the entire 2015 season.
Kevin White, who emphatically said on Friday, I do not have a stress fracture. And then on Saturday said, I have a stress fracture. I guess that was a rough Friday night for Kevin White. I'm sorry, Kevin. These guys, and they're outright lying about the injuries. I understand if you don't want to give the information out. No comment works better than a bold-faced lie.
It does.
Especially when you get found out within 24 hours. Here's a sampling of texts, okay? And just on different areas of the spectrum on Luke Jokel, all right? 641-1010, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. This one, Luke got beat on that one play, but clearly he's better simply based on Blake's time in the pocket. We read this one. Bortles had plenty of time to go through progressions. That's what one person had to say. Let's see. How bad do you guys think Luke Jokel felt in film study when he was laying flat on his face mask while the rest of the O-line was holding their blocks? That was another perspective on the performance. Let's see. Where you're drafted does matter. Cap money spent and dead money accounted for if cut because you can't play. It's resources wasted. That's in regards to Jokel going number two overall. Two things. The next texter says, these are all separate texts. Parnell is a beast. He played really well. And Beatles sucks. Just as much as Jokel getting worked, so was Beatles. The left side is hurting. Hashtag Jaguars today. The next one, maybe Luke will just be an okay player. People need to be okay with that. Tony, meaning Baselli, was an all-decade player, and it's ridiculous for some to try and make those comparisons between the two. At this point, people need to hope for consistent play. Maybe he's more Meester than Baselli. I'll be cool with that. And so should everyone else. Here's the problem. He hasn't been Meester.
Not yet.
He hasn't been up to that level, and that's the point. And it's fine if you're Meester and you're drafting Meester in round three, and that's what you get. And you know, look, I get it. You can find Pro Bowlers late. You find early guys who don't turn out to be Pro Bowlers. But I think back to what the caller was or the texter was talking about with in terms of cap space and all these things, if you consistently miss on your opportunities – to get stars in the top 10 of the draft, then it's just, look, it's harder to find them later. Can you find some? Maybe Aaron Colvin and Telvin Smith turn out to be stars, but wouldn't it be nice to take those two as compliments to all the top 10 stars that you've drafted, right? And additions to that, that's how you build a superpower team. And maybe Blake Bortles turns out to be that. Maybe Luke Jokel still turns out to be that. And by the way, at this point, I think you got those comparisons to Baselli very early. I don't think anybody's saying he needs to be Baselli. He needs to be better. Pro Football Focus, Tony, and I know people have issues with them, okay? But, you know, Tony brought up, do I watch all the left tackles around the league on Friday's pregame show? No, I don't. No, Football Focus does, okay? And they get criticized because people say, well, they don't know what the call is on that play. Well, they're doing the most thorough analysis possible without offense coordinators walking them through and holding their hand and explaining everyone's assignment on every play. And Luke Joeckel was one of the lowest-rated offensive tackles in the entire league last year. So they do watch every tackle in the National Football League. Can he turn it around? Is he getting better? I saw certainly some signs of improvement, but there's still some concerns for me at this point in time. That's all I'm saying.
And I think that's fair. I think it's fair, and I think based on, again, being fair to the fans out there who we interact with on a daily basis here on the show, Mike, it's we know that there is a large level of concern with Luke Joeckel and what he's going to turn into as a player in the league. And, look, if people like Tony Boselli and Jeff Wagaman tell me that the skill set's there, I believe them.
It may be.
Right. Like,
the results need to be there.
Right. I believe them that Luke Joeckel has what he needs to be an effective player in the National Football League. He needs to be an effective player in the National Football League. And there's a level of expectation. I don't care how lousy the guys around him were in the 2013 draft. There's a level of expectation when you're the number two overall pick in a draft that you're not going to be a guy that going into year three, we're waiting to see if you're going to be okay at your position. You expect more out of a guy getting picked in that kind of spot, but that's where we're at with Joeckel, and I think it's completely fair for fans to be frustrated at this point.
All right, so Wild West Guns Gold Money, let's take a quick timeout. Let's come back with the senior writer from Jaguars.com, Mr. John Osier, will grace us with his presence here at Everbank in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. It is a Monday, again, brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Still time for you to get in at 641-1010, both on the phones and the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Oh, let's welcome him aboard, Johnny O. He could not stand, he could not bear to be away on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday for any longer, and he's here with us now.
I gotta say, I'm curious about the Oh No's intro.
Yeah?
Because it sounds like the reaction I get when I go home, which is, oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no, he's
that's
home.
Kind of, right, and since you're on multiple times a week, it's Oh No's. It's multiple Oh No's.
Oh no, here yes. Again. So, I mean,
once again,
I'm
oh
fine
no.
with it because I'm used to it.
Yes.
It's just, I'm not sure if the sponsor is pro O or anti.
We're not going to really tiptoe around it, John. We're a little concerned about your performance.
Well, that's fine. I mean, it's been there.
Oh no, here comes John.
That's right.
Oh no's, because you do know stuff. You know stuff, John.
Yeah.
It was a rare, you watch the film of this one, right?
I,
this is a rare.
I had to watch the film. And
one
I,
where you're not in the attendance.
Like I said on this show, it's the first game I've missed or been unable to cover the team that I've covered, ever.
In your career.
Yeah, well, right. Working at the TU.
And tell people why you were.
My wife and I took my son to college for freshman orientation. It won't be a situation where I go. He's a sophomore, a junior, a senior. You know, but for this one, we felt like we had to be there. And,
it's your kid, man. It's all good.
Tough weekend, but the good news is he's fired up. It was tougher on mom and dad, and that's the scenario you look for when you're sending him away to college.
No doubt.
It's always going to be tough, and you've got that coming up.
You know what?
Good luck.
Hopefully, I had that coming up. Yeah. I don't know what my kid wants to do tomorrow. Never mind, however many years that be, seven more years from now. He just started sixth grade,
wow.
So I hope I have that same problem.
It's a joy, and it's one of those moments of life for
that's awesome, man.
Life events. It's cool. It's really
very
cool.
All right. Well, now let's get to the good of what you saw out of this performance. Clearly, there were some definite positives for
sure.
The Jacksonville Jaguars on Friday night. So tell us a few things that stood out to you.
Well, from my perspective, it was interesting to me because I was following the first part on Twitter. We were still sort of running around. And then I got back to the hotel, and I was able to watch the replay from the beginning. And it is funny, the instant horrible reaction to things. And the first series, you know, I got back to the hotel thinking, oh my goodness, here we go. You know, here we go. All the wheels are off. And I wasn't really checking the score after that. And then once I watched the first quarter, I was like, well, this isn't bad. You know, I mean, it looked pretty good in a lot of areas where I think looking pretty good mattered, especially the fact that they got the running game going, which is clearly what Gus, what the offense has talked about wanting to do. they want that to be the backbone and what they can build off of. And I have no doubt that T.J. Yeldon is going to be okay when he's in there. I think what this showed the other night is pretty deep running back group, and it looks like a running game that could have some options. They might not just have to do it all one way. If you count screens to Gerhardt as the running game, which is sort of the same sort of thing you're doing, very encouraging signs for that. And I'm burying the lead because when Bortles looked like he looked with that sort of comfort, with that sort of pocket presence, the accuracy, all you could say was so far so good on both of those situations. It felt like it had something to build on offensively. It lasted longer than good stretches had lasted the last two preseasons, and it seemed to be real. So that was my overall impression, was you couldn't have had a better sign for an offense that hasn't been able to get anything going, you know, really since 2011, if you on a consistent basis.
Yeah, one thing they brought up on the drill this morning, Tony, and we didn't touch on so far today. It's just nice to see him throw it past the sticks on third and long. You know,
yeah.
Yes, you can catch it short of the sticks and run for the first down. It's easier if the guy's already there.
The play that stood out on that front, and again, I wasn't logging the game, so I have to go by memory. But the play where Bortles sort of half stepped up in the pocket, he looked around, and then he found Allen Robinson.
Yes,
I think it was for about 15 yards, was
right.
It?
Third and 14. Yeah.
And that wasn't the only play that he looked good on, but to come off. And again, this must be prefaced by the Steelers weren't really game planning. And Bortles looked very good at times last preseason when teams weren't game planning. So there is another step and another test that has to be passed. But I don't think anybody watched that game and didn't feel like it was a player more in control, more over his own 2 feet, so to speak, more comfortable in his own skin at the position.
Something else that Mike and I haven't gotten into yet today, look, I called it the dead zone last year all season long, and it felt like this was an offense that was pretty effective moving the ball from their own 20 to get into opponent's territory and then would bog down.
It did better at that
than
most people remember, I think.
But they were 2 for 2 with Bortles in the game in the red zone. They got 10 points out of red zone opportunities, mm-hmm. including that rush for a touchdown on a fourth down where maybe they do, maybe they don't go for it. You know, if it's a regular season football game, I don't know what kind of decision they make in that kind of spot. But it was encouraging to me to see them have some success in that part of the field, which is not something they did a lot of last year either.
Well, and at this point in his career, and it's still early in his career if he's going to go on to be a long-term guy, at this point in his career, he's still at the stage where however you need to score in the red zone, you do it. Over time, you would hope that there's a lot more four-yard touchdown passes from Bortles than there are runs. But that's what he can give you. There is a dynamic playmaking feel to the guy when he's in those kind of situations. I don't think they necessarily want him manning up at the goal line on every on every series. Because you get hurt that way. But for right now, with this offense trying to build and find something that it can believe in to produce points, Mike, we've talked about it a lot. That difference in a touchdown early in that situation, had this been a regular season game and a field goal, all of a sudden, now that maybe is a 14-10 score at halftime instead of 14-6 and feeling like you're out. You know, it's those 4 points that you get that keep you in more manageable game situations down the, you know, points matter, and they didn't get enough of them last year. Looks like they have just more guys who can score.
Yes, and, you know, playing without several of those guys, and Julius Thomas played two snaps, no T.J. Yeldon, and no Marquise Lee. So, you know, he was certainly didn't have his full complement. The defensive line, your projected starting four, was not in the game at that point in time. So, but, like you said, Pittsburgh's not game planning, Jags not game planning. As we go on, the results that we see over the next few weeks will become more significant. Ultimately,
you can't judge based on what they weren't going against. We all know what they weren't going against.
All you can do is say, what did they do, right?
And it just, you know, I got a significantly better feel watching that, even looking at the stats, even sort of from the quotes after the game, it feels like the offensive line, and I understand Steelers weren't blitzing. They weren't doing a lot of things that you see in the regular season. But it just felt like the offensive line was overall able to control situations, whereas last year there were too many times that it couldn't. And that's not every play, but when you can run, when you can sort of trust your line to get 3 or 4 yards and positive yardage, it just puts the offense in so much more of an ability to function. And too often last year, they just couldn't even get started on the offensive line. So that overall is a good sign, although I know we've got a topic we need to cover on the offensive line.
Well, yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, sure. Luke, we talked about on the break, I'm not trying to be the poster child for Luke Jokel needs to get better. I think it's a widely held opinion that he does.
No doubt.
And so you have, you know, a couple of glaring plays. You have probably a lot of good, consistent plays.
Right.
And as you were putting it on the break, John, if you're a wide receiver, you catch a couple of touchdowns and you have a bad drop,
right,
they're going to focus on the touchdowns. There's not quite the equivalent if you're an offensive tackle and you give up a strip sack. That's going to be the focus unless your team is running for 350 yards that day, or you know what I mean? Unless you're winning easily.
It's sort of the one position. And again, I am not here defending Luke because he'd be the first one to tell you, and there's no doubt, as a left tackle, you can't give up run-free sacks around the outside and not be criticized. And you can't do it and play very long in the league. That has to get fixed, and there's no doubt that that's what he's trying to move toward. At the same time, it might be the one position where there's no way to make up for a bad play in terms of how the game's perceived. Offensive line is the only position. If a defensive line gets rolled, he can come back and have a sack fumble, and everybody's going, hey, sack fumble, awesome. You know, running back can fumble and score. Quarterback can throw a pick six and come back and you sort of own the game. Once that sack's given up, how do you
make up
the rest of the game?
Right.
He can stonewall James Harrison or whoever he's playing, and everybody goes, yeah, I should have done that. So that's a 50-year-old issue for that position. That's not new to Luke Jokel. That's the reality that you live with when you play that position.
No doubt. I mean, Nelson Aguilar, I think everyone feels like had a good game yesterday. He dropped two.
Right.
But he made the one 35-yard play where nobody else is going to make it.
Right.
Right. And he had a good day. He dropped two.
Clay Harbor, you know.
Big drop.
Drops.
Obviously bad drop.
But he has the touchdown and, you know, he can drive home going, hey, touchdown. Now, I'm sure he's kicking himself over the drop. I'm not saying
sure,
that.
Because
there's something to make up for it. There's something where you can say, okay, I got a positive out of it. Once that offensive lineman gives up that sack or that sack fumble, he's pretty much sitting there driving home going, I'm going to hear about that.
Right. But although,
which is the way it is.
You know what? If they're drive killers, certainly, you give up the big sack, you know, and you never want to get your quarterback hit. But if the team can overcome it and go down and score on that drive, it's water under the bridge. Much like, the Clay Harbor drop came on the drive where Bortles ran for the touchdown, right?
Yeah.
Later on the drive. So you kind of, all right, we would have liked to have had it easier, but we made up for it and we persevered in the face of a difficult circumstance. One thing we haven't touched on, and I think was a general positive all around, the return game for the Jags. I mean, Rashad Green, you hope he can give you one of those a week would be phenomenal, or somebody could. I mean, you forget.
Right.
You're allowed to run for big chunks of yardage on occasion on special teams. It can happen.
Yeah, that rule has been in the books a long time.
They let you do that if you're capable of making a few guys miss. And I thought on the kickoff returns, you had Denard set the tone early with the 34-yarder. Nick Marshall had a 35-yarder. Grant, while it wasn't anything eye-popping on the returns, showed you that speed on the play that got called back, and which you can put in your mind's eye him doing that on kickoff returns. So I think they feel like they've got better options right now. They're going to have to prove it, you know, in game situations when it counts, but they have better options in the return game than they've had in a while.
Yeah, and I think that was important for Rashad Green, sort of looking for a way to stand out. It hasn't done a whole lot in practice. I don't think, as I say that, I don't think that's very unusual for a, you know, day three drafted wide receiver to be sort of still waiting to make impact plays in the passing game. That's usually a position where that takes a long time. Very good for him and the Jaguars and sort of where they'll use him this year if they can start seeing him do well in punt returns, Because as you said, they just need that. You need at some point, I'm not saying every week, over a 16-game period, you would like to see 7, 8, 9 where you break off a 20-yard return, and all of a sudden, instead of being at your 35-yard, the other team's 45. You know, those are big, especially for a team that, even with what we saw on Friday, still has a young offense. There are still going to be times with a quarterback this young where there are long stretches of, okay, what are the point? Might be only a half, but there are going to be some struggles as you see things and adapt to things offensively for a young team, so they need special teams to work.
Agree with you on that. What do you be looking for most? What area will you be looking for the most improvement from week one to week two in the preseason?
Well, I don't necessarily know that I have to see improvement. I think what you want to see is you want to see them be able to do offensively again what they did on Friday. You need those things not to be a fluke. You need the running game to be productive, to put the quarterback in passing situations that are manageable, and you need consistent from week to week from Blake Bortles. I think everybody would say that if he performs like that, with that sort of accuracy, with that sort of poise, you just watched him feeling like he was in control, and you had a good feeling at the quarterback spot that this guy can get things done to make you feel positive about the offense. Been a long time since you felt that way. So right now with Blake, that's what you need to see sustained. I think everybody sort of feels like if he can do the sustainable stuff, if he can do the stuff, you know, the 13-yard pass on 3rd and 7, the spectacular and the moment he seems to have a knack for. Once he gets those basics down, he can sort of make that play like the, you know, the touchdown run and the, you know, the stuff he did in preseason last year. That stuff, he's got a flair. It's been the, can we do it? Can he do it all through the course of a game and keep you in it, be consistent, help the offense function?
All right, Johnny O, what do you have coming up on Jaguars.com?
Chris Clemens today is back at practice. We anticipate him talking, so that'll be the story today. And as we move on, getting ready for the Giants week, and we'll be covering some themes, talking to Bortles later in the week, I'm sure. We're trying to do Jaguars.com later, live later this week. So I'm getting back into it. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold week for me.
It really is. And by the way, Loggemans in tomorrow, so you might want to listen because it's going to be really good.
I know. I'll do one of those where I come by and go, hey, Mike. And it's like that guy at the dance where the girl, you know, sort of left him a couple weeks ago, won't pay attention
to him.
Yeah,
I'm not
going to
look in your direction.
Yeah, it's
cast my eyes.
It's an awkward moment.
It will be, I'm sure, but we'll get through it. We always do.
John, all right, guys, I enjoy
congrats
it.
On your kid making it off to school.
It's emotional, but it's fun.
There you go. John Osier, everybody, senior writer for Jaguars.com here with us on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony coming back. Fan feedback spotlight asking you today, outside of Blake, who is clearly the top positive, and the injuries, which are always a negative, what was your biggest positive and negative takeaway from the Jags' performance on Friday night? We'll get to some of your reaction to that coming up next. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today continues live at Everbank on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Sorry, I just read a funny one on Facebook, Tony. I don't know if I'm going to throw it out there or not, but you're welcome to visit the Jaguars Today Facebook page and read all the comments you like for yourselves, all right? Some of them make the air, others don't. Speaking of comments, before we get to the fan feedback spotlight today on this Wild West Guns of Gold Monday, a couple more comments from Gus Bradley over the weekend, wrapping up his reaction to the preseason opener, 23-21 Jags victory. Of course, Julius Thomas going out with the hand injury. Still Mercedes Lewis, who's been healthy throughout the summer, has had a very good summer OTAs camp by all, you know, impressions. Clay Harbor looked fantastic, with the exception of the drop. And by fantastic, he's getting open. He's running well, you know, and he caught the touchdown pass. Clearly, you don't want him to drop that pass. There's no doubt about that. But he shows you why they were so excited about him last year. And, that gives you some depth to get you through. Gus was asked about if he's comfortable right now with the tight end situation, knowing he's going to miss Julius Thomas at least until the start of the regular season.
Yes, I do. I think Mercedes, as we were discussing as a camp, I know since I've been here, we feel like he's had his best training camp. And I know that some people in the building that have seen him, others, would feel like he's at his best training camp in years. And I know he feels good. He likes where he's at. So, yes, feel very good about that. Clay, you know, it's great when you have some guys come in like Ole, Doug Marrone, Skip, who don't know the players and come in and talk about their skill sets and just to see how close you are. And they've been impressed with Clay Harbors, not only his work ethic, but his skill set from the beginning. So very pleased with him. Nick, good skill set, tough, physical, the consistency, what he needs to work on. And we're seeing flashes of him becoming more and more consistent. So that tight end has always been, as we looked at starting OTAs, a pretty strong group for us. And, you know, it's going to be unfortunate with Julius, but hopefully as they projections will come true.
Yeah, I happen to agree with Coach. I think it's a pretty good group at tight end they got, and hopefully Julius Thomas is able to go for week one. Another guy that we're hoping will be able to go for week one is Jonathan Cyprian with that hand injury that he suffered on Friday night. Gus Bradley also asked about the situation at strong safety.
Well, we're going to get Sample back this week, too. Now, very similar, no contact this week. Don't anticipate him playing. But then the following week, so to get him back, I think, will help us but with Cyprian. And then Josh Evans has been a guy that has played both free and strong, as well as Lawson. He's played strong and free. So I think with those guys, Lawson's a guy that's really starting to come on. He did a good job on special teams. And so, you know, those guys will get reps along with Sip, and as long as, you know, we can control the environment.
You know, and while they have quality depth, I think, at tight end, right, and I think that they've got guys, you're not going to panic if Cyprian misses a game or two because you've got guys that can play in that spot. If one of them were to miss an extended period of time, the one you don't want to miss is Julius Thomas because of the high-end proven playmaking ability. It's not that Cyprian's backups are better than Thomas's backups. It's that Thomas, when he's on the top of his game, looked like the best player on the roster for a good portion of the offseason. So speedy recovery to both of those guys, hopefully. Today we asked you, other than Blake Bortles, and injuries being a positive and negative that everyone could have easily gone to.
Sure.
What was your biggest takeaway, positive and negative, from Friday night? And what did we get?
Here's what we got from Gabe. Positive, Cap Cappy sacks. Negative, our only sacks were by Cap Cappy.
That's a good one.
From Chris, positive, Bernard Pierce. Negative, tie between drops from the wide receivers and House getting beat deep. Cristiano, positive, offense progressing. Negative, I still don't want to talk about negatives. From Jason, positive, the running game. Negative, drops. From Colby, number one positive, Allen Robinson going to have a monster season. Number one negative, pass rush non-existent. From Black Dog Express, negative was Luke wearing ankle weights. Positive, Denard and Toby. Wow, I also like Tyson at fullback. Effective. From Nate, positive, the run game. Negative, no pass rush. Hashtag, that's good job. From Josh, positive, overall offensive line play. Negative, poor showing by first team defense. From Scott, positive, the run game, special teams, and Cap Cappy. Negative, left tackle is worrying me now. From Eric, the running game looks strong as my main positive. No pressure from the defense is my main concern. From Demetrius, number one positive is Jokel bouncing back after a rough start. Fans must be aware he's improving. Number one negative is drops. From Nick, negative would be the pass rush, Leo's in particular. And positive is Rashad Green at punt returner. Hashtag we miss you, Dante. From Cam, positive, solid pass push from the offensive line on running plays. And negative, lack of a pass rush. Granted, four starters didn't play. Potentially four starters didn't play.
Yeah.
I got a feeling Andre Branch could very well be the opening day.
He may well be, especially with Clemens missing some time here.
Sure.
Whatever. Okay. There are four guys that are going to be heavily involved. You're going to rotate all these guys in and out anyway. So there are four guys that you're going to count on to play a lot for you. And I don't know what you're going to count on or expect from Cedric Marks early in the year anyway.
Right.
You know, having injured his ACL in the 17th week. A couple on Facebook from Tommy Blair, positive, Jaguars Monday is back, and negatives are for Nancy's. So apparently everyone who is willing to point out what didn't go right is a Nancy. Damon went with starting with the negatives first, too many darn drops, or House getting burnt, take your pick. Positives, Parnell is a monster, period. And, you know, I didn't see anything glaringly bad from Jeremy Parnell, certainly. I saw some good things from him, and you know, that's just the way it goes. Preseason game one, it's in the books. Jeff Loggeman, I'm sure, has watched the film. We'll get his perspective on it tomorrow, and we'll turn a page. After that, get ready for the New York Giants on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's funny. Look, I didn't grade these guys, obviously, in the game. Pro Football Focus, Parnell had a lower grade than Jokel.
Really?
In the game.
What were their relative grades? Do you remember?
It was negative 2.2 and negative 1.7
so
for
neither,
the game.
Neither one got a good, a positive rating.
I don't know. I didn't notice Parnell doing anything bad.
I didn't either.
During the game. I have no idea where that came from.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, there's no perfect evaluation out there. Again, other than the offensive coordinator and the head coach sitting down watching the film, knowing what everybody's assignment is on any given play.
Sure.
Right? And unless you're privy to that, you're probably going to have to draw your own conclusions at times. And, you know, the glaring mistakes are the easy things to point out. And as we pointed out as well, sometimes you can have 20 positive plays and they get overlooked because of the one big negative.
No doubt about it. And, you know, as we begin to wrap things up here, going to welcome in XL Primetime in a couple moments, but keep in mind what they were going up against. Not only a team that wasn't game planning against them, but a Pittsburgh team that defensively was really bad in 2014. I mean, really bad. They were 27th or 28th against the run last year. Have they really improved that much bringing in a guy like Bud Dupree as their first-round draft pick? I mean, it's just, are they all that much better, especially when they're not game planning to stop Jacksonville in a game like that? I feel good about the offense, like I think everyone should, coming out of week one of the preseason, but I'm really curious to see what it's going to look like going forward, because no, I'm not sure the Steelers have a lot of bullets on D right
but,
now.
But as John Osier pointed out, you know what? You'd feel worse if they didn't perform well
against that,
right?
They did well. So it's good.
They did what they could do, and particularly the quarterback. The quarterback solves a lot of dilemmas. If you, as a caller pointed out earlier, if you've got a quarterback that can play at a high level, it can make up for a lot of deficiencies on your football team.
No doubt.
And let's hope, Blake, that was step one of a continued path in a positive direction all season long for him. So, one in the books and a W for the Jags, albeit of the preseason variety. We'll move on. We'll talk with Loggeman about the film breakdown tomorrow, and then move on, get ready for the New York Giants as the week goes along. Glad you're with us here, and we hope you're with us every day, chronicling the Jaguars' efforts to be postseason relevant in 2015. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, wrapping up North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. Give them a call at 693-0777 or visit them on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville, or just stop by their website, guns4jax.com, guns4jax.com, to learn more about Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. As Tony pointed out, we'll say hello to the boys of XL Primetime coming up. Thanks to John Osier for popping in with us, and all of you out there in Radio Land as well. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. XL Primetime next on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo! That's great job!